Hello and welcome to Hey Not the Face with your host John Nash and your producer me Steffi Haynes. And today we are going to talk about Francis Ngannou because it is Francis Ngannou Fight Week. John, are you as excited as I am?
I am, but let's not forget he has a dance partner, a major dance partner, who might actually be the A side in this, and that's Anthony Joshua. So it's a Ngannou Joshua fight week, I would say.
I would say that it's all about Francis Ngannou.
Well, I mean, listen, I have nothing against Joshua.
I kind of
enjoy him. I like what he's, you know, him and Wilder and everybody kind of rejuvenated the heavyweight division, even though they never really fought. Mm-hmm. But I am definitely partial the big Fran. I am definitely on the Francis Ngannou bandwagon. I'm definitely cheering. I'm going to be not impartial at all. I am very partisan. So,
yes.
I got to be honest at the same time. I got to favor Joshua in the bout that's coming up. But Ngannou is 100% I want to see win. And I do give him this is not Conor McGregor going against Mayweather.
No.
This man has a legitimate, serious chance.
I'm picking him.
At least I think
him.
He does.
I'm picking him.
That's good. I would.
I'm just being bold.
If I made picks, you know, emotionally, I might have to just from the heart, but I don't make picks. So.
Sure you do.
Yeah, I don't. I hope everybody just has a good time.
Now, Anthony Joshua is in this clearly the A side now that we're being serious. And the reason why he's the A side is because, John, tell us.
Well, he's the A-side because he's the more established boxer.
Thank you.
And he has a built-in fan base in the UK with built-in pay-per-view history. But anyway, if you go ahead, then I'll add my input on that at the end.
Well, I was going to ask you what you thought of his place in space since the back-to-back Usyk losses. And now I understand he's had 3 fights since then. He's won them all. And progressively, he's looked better and better in each fight. But his dance partners in those 3 fights were not world beaters. So I kind of have to withhold a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked much better. I mean, mm-hmm. not much, but it's hard to say, oh, he's looked better than he fought against Usyk, because Usyk played probably the biggest part in why he didn't look as good.
Right.
Because Usyk's just a tremendous boxer skill-wise. But he's improved and looked better in his skills than he did pre-Usyk. So that's, I think, got a lot of people back on his bandwagon. He is, as soon as you become a star, even losing, you can retain that stardom. I mean, the arc of a boxer generally is you rise up the ranks, you become kind of known as the best or one of the best boxers in the world and win a title. That's when you can become a star. And then even when you lose a little bit, that fan base doesn't completely go. And his is stuck around. And plus, people that are curious are coming back. But I'll say, big Francis Ngannou is a star now. His mm-hmm. his Q rating has really gone up since that Tyson Fury bout, since he left the UFC, and there's been so much news about him. He brings in a different fan base because he also brings in a lot of African fans and fans in France, French fans, that he's popular in France and other parts of the world. But he also brings in a lot of MMA UFC fans that didn't care about boxing but have come over to watch him. And if he does good, and especially if he beats Joshua, he will be the A side against anybody but the champ, because he is going to be a mega star if he wins this fight.
Even against the champ, though, I feel like he would be the A side.
He would arguably be maybe the bigger draw at that point.
That's what I mean. Yes.
But it's hard to say you're the A side when the champ holds the titles.
Sure.
And the titles are what generate more revenue than anything, because people want to see you go for the title. So that the champion, and plus if Fury beats Usyk and retains the belts, he holds a win. He will be also a major star. He'll have more of the leverage because he holds a win over you. So technically, at that point, Ngannou might garner more fan interest, and you'd say, oh, that makes him the A-side, but Fury would have more of the leverage still. So I would still say he's the A-side.
I'm going strictly off Q rating since you mentioned it, though.
Yeah, it will be through the roof. It'll be Conor McGregor has been the biggest attraction in the fight business by just general interest since Mayweather left. And I mean, it's hard to say Ngannou gets to that level, but he's going to be the next closest thing.
I think he could get to that level, actually.
But, Well, yeah, if he knocks out, again, this is really based on the presumption that something incredible happens, which is him like knocking out Joshua. There's a chance he goes to just a level that no one saw. But based on a picturesque, perfect knockout, you know, besides that, he still could rise to, you know, a top level draw. I mean, it's still going to be hard to match McGregor and or even Canelo Alvarez, because Canelo Alvarez has the Mexican fan base, right? A built-in fan base with money that they spend consistently on boxing, where Ngannou gets, you know, he has is Nigeria and France and stuff, but they're not really known as major, or I should say Cameroon, sorry, apologies to West African people there. Cameroon fan base, but it spills over into all of West Africa and probably France. And then UFC fans, but it's not, I don't think that, I'm not sure that's as hardcore of purchasers of pay-per-views as the, you know, as the Mexican-American audience for Canelo in America.
So how much do we think Francis is making for this fight?
Well, we don't have exact numbers, but we have some estimates because they told us it's like basically twice what he made in the UFC. I shouldn't say this fight. His previous fight, he supposedly made twice as much as he made his entire UFC career, or more than that. So the estimates I'd heard thrown around, it's eight figures. When people heard eight figures, I think they always assume just 10 million because they have to take the lowest number possible, but it was more than 10 million, but probably in the low teens, let's say 13 million, 14 million total was the amount that was floating around. I heard he's going to get also about twice that, maybe more than twice that for this fight. And the two fights together, there is a chance at the end of if this fight does really well and he does above and beyond what his guarantee purse is, there's a chance when the Forbes list is made, that they can show to Forbes that he had made enough to make the bottom of that list, the number 50th guy, which would be around, you know, last year means over 40 million total for two fights. So he stands to make a lot of money and a lot more if he wins this fight.
It's still early in the year. It's only March.
Well, the Forbes list comes out in May, and it's only for the 12 months before.
Okay, I didn't.
Yeah,
know that.
So yeah, but the other company, other ones have the annual year list one. So for them, if he wins this fight and he fights for the title, because if he wins, I don't think he's fighting for PFL, but if he wins one fights for the title, I think it's guaranteed he makes the top highest paid athlete list.
Oof. So awesome. I'm fingers crossed. You know, I want him to just make history.
Yeah, my old arthritic fingers are trying to cross right now. Just peeking over. There we go.
So how much is Joshua making?
Well, the thing is, we know what Joshua's made in the past, so we can probably take a better educated guess. The reports floating around is he's going to get $50 million for this fight. Now, those are from British sources who end up, I never trust, because you end up checking back and they always end up being wrong, just made up. But that was the number floating around. But the good news is, like I said, we have, you know, because he files his company, Sparta Promotions, with Company House, that's what you do in the UK, a business, and the information becomes public. We know what he made on his previous bouts, right? So his last two. Both against Usyk, actually, you know, way back. But just looking at his last two Usyk bouts, we see that for the first bout against Usyk in London, he got paid for the bout 14.7 million pounds. So that's about $18 million for that fight. On top of that, he made another 4.5 million or so, or 5 million in sponsorship pounds, so about $7.5 to $8 million. The next year when they went to Saudi Arabia, when he was not the champion, he was the challenger, he got £28.3 million, so about $35 million US. Now Usyk, we know, got the same. So that was a tremendous amount that the Saudi Arabia put up for that fight. And on top of that, his sponsorship went from like 5.5 million, like we said, up to 13 or 14 million in pounds. And a big part of that is non-UK sponsorship. And you look at that and it's pretty obvious. That seems to be Middle Eastern sponsorship. Mm-hmm. So really that might've been money that went to him for the bout. Should really be more described better as bout money, sponsorship for the event itself, because it probably came from Saudi Arabia. So if you look at those numbers and you look at what Ngannou is supposed to make, it seems very likely that he's probably going to make around $40 million for this fight, let's say, maybe more.
Wow.
That's... And again, if he wins, yeah. his pay is also going to go through the roof for the next one.
For sure. Absolutely. So what is PFL going to be watching out for with this match? Because they've got to be shitting bricks right now.
Well, it's weird because on one hand, this is the one of the best outcomes they could have because they had signed Ngannou. And now this fighter that they signed to the PFL and advertised as a PFL fighter and shows up at their events, he is becoming one of the biggest combat sports stars. The better he does in boxing, the bigger sports star he has. So on one hand, they got to be cheering, go, man, if he wins, we can just really advertise. We have the number one combat sports guy, right? But if he, but also they got to be cheering like we don't want him to win because there's a chance he never comes and fights for the PFL. They never get to take advantage of it. And in many ways, they have a discount now where they offered him a massive contract for MMA standards. That's way more than most people think you should pay for MMA fighters. Now you are getting, if he wins and continues this rise, you are getting one of the biggest combat sports stars for a major discount. And so I guess on one hand, they don't want him to lose. But on the other hand, they know if he wins, why would he come back to MMA when it's going to pay him, when it's going to risk his potential fight in boxing in the future and pay him a fraction, no matter how much it is, of what he could make right now in a major boxing event.
Man, let's talk about this Harvard case study, because that all comes into play here. So what does that say about Ngannou's PFL contract?
Well, that's interesting. There was a Harvard case study that came out and hasn't, we should note, because we are extrajudicious and we have great sources. We were able to get a copy of this before it's been published. So I will not share all the details because that'd be stealing from the author, but we will share some of the details because they're so damn interesting. So what that has is a lot of details about Conor, about Francis Ngannou, about his negotiations with the UFC and going to PFL. And one thing I thought interesting I should point out too is at the time, Markel Martin and another figure with them at that works with Ngannou, their thinking was if he can get into boxing at the time that they're signing PFL, his future potential value, lifetime value for the next 3 to 5 years would be about $100 million in earnings that Ngannou could make. That's what they're shooting for. I think if he wins this fight, he's going to double that at least. So that was one interesting thing, is the amount of money they thought was potentially on the table overall. Between the MMA deal and the boxing deal. But what this case study showed, and most of it probably comes from Ngannou himself, it seems like, is our reporting earlier that we did about the contract seems to be pretty accurate, at least very close to what the details are. There's a few details we missed, and we'll get into the terms, but for the amount he's getting paid, he is getting a high seven-figure guarantee, right? Mm-hmm. He gets a pay-per-view when he sells pay-per-views. It crosses a couple hundred thousand, I guess. They don't give exact amount, but something around there. He starts getting low seven figures, not low seven figures. I'm sorry, low double digits per buy. So that's at least $10 per buy, maybe more. They don't give a range. He also gets a seven-figure one-time signing bonus. He gets his own sponsorship in the cage. He gets a bonus of seven figures plus based on how much the ticket sales do. So he will make a lot of money for an MMA fighter in a PFL bout. The problem is he won't make as much as he does in boxing right now, because boxing, just the way it's set up, and he has opponents there, he can make a lot more. Now, if he had an opponent in MMA, if he had an opponent that could sell hundreds of thousands, maybe, you know, 700,000-900,000 pay-per-views or a million, he could do just as well in MMA or close to as he does in boxing, but he doesn't have that right now. And I don't think the problem's going to be that. What is also interesting, and we should probably talk about, is what the terms of the contract are.
Yes, I am on pins and needles waiting.
Well, apparently it's a 2-year contract for only two fights with PFL. Now, it doesn't mention this here, but Ngannou said this in interviews that he was not going to sign any contract that didn't have an end date, right? Basically a sunset like he had with the UFC. Mm-hmm. That means this contract surely has a sunset, right? And the two fight deal, they have, they're supposed to give him a fight within a year of signing it, and then within another year after that. But there's, I guess, some carve outs if he gets two boxing matches. So my question is, at what point there? It seems like with only two fights under the deal, and being 2 years and whatever the extension, there's a strong possibility he continues doing well in boxing. This contract, I would guess, might sunset, terminate, you know, reach its termination date before he ever even has a fight, possibly.
I love that. That's, oh, okay. Whoever did his contract was brilliant.
Yeah, if that's true, and I don't want to say, maybe there's an extension, maybe it'll be a 4 years instead of two, you know, maybe. But the other thing I remember too is, Ngannou, according to this case study, Ngannou knew that he did not have to fight Gon in the UFC. He could have waited out. He didn't have to finish his 8 fights. He could have waited out his contract, and his contract would be up a year later, right? But he decided, I am going to honor it and finish out my contract so no one can say I didn't honor my 8-fight deal. So with that kind of, you know, that kind of, I guess, just trait that he has to honor of agreements, that would suggest that Ngannou might not just wait out the whole deal. But it does mean that he has a lot of leverage over when he's going to come back and fight compared to box.
Yeah, yeah. So when we look at what he's making, you would kind of think that other fighters would be like, hey, I want to do what Francis Ngannou did. Why haven't we seen this, though?
You know, you really would think that there'd be other fighters doing that. You look at, now I understand very few fighters can do the boxing route, right? Everybody says, oh, you should go box, but it's only a handful of fighters can make money in boxing. Unless during that brief time when people were interested in Jake Paul beating up an MMA, see if an MMA fighter could knock out Jake Paul, that was an opening for basically anybody. But now it's like, The handful of fighters, there was for a time an interest in Jorge Masvidal boxing. I think that's gone. Conor McGregor, there's interest. There was interest in Nate Diaz. I don't know how much interest there is now after that Jake Paul fight. And Francis Ngannou. That's basically the only people that anybody has interest not, you know, in seeing box is those handful of guys. And so that's not a route others can follow. But even then, without the boxing, you look at what he did with PFL and how PFL has made it a very vocal that they're willing to pay a lot to UFC fighters because they need them so badly. No one has done what he's done. And it's surprising. One, I think, is that fighters are just, they're not aware. They can't imagine they can do it. It takes someone special like Ngannou, who literally brought in an attorney to read through the whole contract twice and explain the whole thing to him. And then realize based on that, that there was a provision that lets him leave the UFC after 5 years, no matter what. When, and I should note, other fighters and managers told Ngannou when he was doing the strategy, they told him, you're reading it wrong. It doesn't say that. You can't get out of your contract. And I know that because people were telling me that when I was doing my reporting. So he ignored them, trusted his attorneys, and stood up to the UFC, where I think other fighters did not, either didn't go the route that he did and hired his own attorneys or just didn't believe it and didn't have faith that it was true, or maybe just didn't think the risk was worth it because they didn't have the boxing payday potentially. But those fighters ended up re-signing with the UFC and signing agreements that got rid of the provision or made it, the contracts are so long, they will not be facing a 5-year sunset again coming up. So that's my guess of what's why, but it is remarkable. The other thing too, possibly, is he didn't grow up as a UFC MMA fan. He grew up as a boxing fan.
Yes.
And I think a lot of fighters, because they're so into UFC and MMA, that they're just used to this is the way the sport works. The UFC is the only entity and there's no other where to go. And you've got to prove yourself in the UFC and this is all I want to do. And so they become laser focused on achieving success in the UFC. Where Ngannou was like, this is just one of many promotions.
Yeah.
And that's a rare thing in MMA. And so because he had that insight, and also because he's apparently superhuman, because the guy accomplishes anything he tries. It's amazing. He did it where everybody else failed to do it. And the other thing is no one can do it.
Now, that brings me to my last question. You said now no one can do it. Why?
Well, because people that listen to the show, I'm sure they've heard us discuss in the past how the sunset provision that Ngannou used to get out of his contract. And I should point out, a lot of people at the time said he didn't use the sunset. It's because he finished his contract and he just had to wait out a year because of a championship clause. The contract doesn't work that way. The champions clause adds 3 fights or 1 year, whatever's shorter, but it also allows, it's under all the same other rules. So if you turn down fights, it keeps extending 6 months. So that's not what let his contract end. What let his contract end is he had a 5-year sunset. And as we reported earlier, that 5-year sunset period, those changes to the contract that made him much less coercive and restrictive were put in 2017. Obviously, as a response to the antitrust lawsuit, put a split in the antitrust lawsuit. And now we have a whole nother suit. And because of what they did that, because there's a whole nother class, the injunctive relief is no longer on the table for the lawsuit. So that's why Francis Ngannou could do what he did. But since then, now over the last few years, they've done a few things to change the contracts so they don't have to face another Francis Ngannou. And one of the things they did is they introduced a class action waiver. And that way, if you sign it, you can't take part in class action. So if you can't take in a class action, now they no longer have to worry about their contracts being too restrictive because you can't sue them for it. So now they went back to very restrictive contracts. And so you have with you, I think, too, a couple terms from a contract.
Yes.
So we'll go through a couple of them and I'll point out the changes that happened so people can be aware of the difference. But the Ngannou era, one of the first things it has is that of the terms of it, you know, you have all the terms say the same thing. Like you have to, you know, fight a certain number of four fights in 24 months or whatever, right? Well, and then they say if you fail to take an opponent or get injured, they can extend it 6 months. If you win the title, you become the champion you get another 3 fights added to your deal, right? The champion clause. But in the Ngannou end, they had a couple different provisions in the Ngannou era one, I'll call it. I'll say it's the Ngannou era. And that is, okay, every time you turn down a fight they offer you, right? They extend the contract 6 months, but during the period that Ngannou signed his contract, they can only add that extensions 3 times. In other words, 18 months, they can do it. So they got rid of that in the new contract. Now they can add as many extensions as they want up to that 5-year maximum, right? That's one change. So in the past, a fighter could keep turning down fights if he didn't want one. Think Nate Diaz getting offered Chimaev again and again.
Mm-hmm.
After 18 months, you can't keep offering that. Any fight that I turn down no longer extends my contract. So that's one thing. The other thing they did is the big one is they changed the terms of the what we call the sunset provision. And so I'm going to read that for you. I'll read the original one first.
Okay.
And then I'll read the new one. So let me just find that because I got pages everywhere. Okay. So the other one is pretty simple. It says, notwithstanding the foregoing, the agreement will not be extended pursuant to this section 4 beyond the date, which is 5 years after the effective date of this agreement. So all that means is, okay, notwithstanding the foregoing, in other words, so the foregoing is the earlier portions of the contract where it says you can extend it for turning down fights or being injured and all that stuff. Well, none of that applies. We can ignore that now because after you reach 5 years, the contract ends no matter what based on the date that you sign the contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the new agreement, which is magnificent here, let me close that one so I can get this one. The new terms. The first off is, as I mentioned, they got rid of if you turn down about a declination for each about an election, if you turn on a declaration, the UFC can add 6 months or how long it takes to find a new fighter, right? There's nothing about 18 months maximum. Okay. And then finally, notwithstanding the foregoing, the agreement will not be extended pursuant to this section for beyond the date, which is 5 years after the fighter's first bout under this agreement, provided that any period of time in which the fighter is unable to compete because he/she has been suspended or revoked by an athletic commission or an anti-doping agency, or in which fighter unreasonably refuses to accept any bout offered by Zuffa, shall not be counted towards such 5-year maximum term length. Now, it sounds the same. It's a 5-year max. But you notice right away, one is, it's not when you sign the agreement. It's when your first bout is. So already right there, that adds several months to the agreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
In addition, during the period, this period is suspended when you are suspended or revoked by an athletic commission or an anti-doping agency. So anytime you're suspended by the new UFC, their own anti-doping agency that they made, not USADA, or an athletic commission suspends you. Or, and I've asked attorneys, they think you could very possibly include injury suspensions that athletic commissions give out into this, right?
Jesus. That's just awful.
Which would extend it even more beyond 5 years. So now it's when your first bout, not when you sign it. And if they include athletic commission injury suspensions, that could add months and months and months based on how many fights you have. And on top of it, or in which fighter unreasonably refuses to accept any bout offered by Zuffa. So what is an unreasonable exception of any bout? Basically, that would probably include fights where you say, I don't want to fight. I want to wait for my sunset.
Mm.
And that means you can't wait out your sunset, your 5-year max. And basically, that just makes the sunset useless because there's not a hard 5-year limit. This goes back to the period when they're almost perpetual, these contracts. And that means no one going forward can do what Francis Ngannou did, which is just wait out a sunset. Or what Paulo Costa did when his sunset was coming in and he demanded to negotiate a much better deal.
Well, there is one that could possibly be, and that's Conor, right?
We think, because Conor signed a contract about the same time as Francis Ngannou, they added those terms to split it for the antitrust case. You would not select a carve out for any fighters, no matter how big, if the whole purpose was to show that you changed your contracts, right?
Uh-huh.
So he very likely has that in his contract. Now, the question is, there is another provision in this that says if you retire, there's a separate 5-year period. Did Conor McGregor retire so that he could get on the juice to get back into shape and to do the movie and all that? If he did, that might have added time to his sunset period, right?
And there's a caveat to that as well, right? You have to put it in writing.
Yeah, you'd have to put in writing, but I imagine he put in writing. You would think you'd have to notify him, put in writing, to be able to be taken off the USADA.
Right.
Program. So that I'm imagining that's what he did. And that's the case. It might be a year or two after the sunset, might be a year or two later. And his sunset would have been sometime fall of last year. So it might not be until next year, might not be the year after that. So it still might be a while. But but the other possibility is it's coming up soon. I mean, who knows for sure?
Wow. Okay. I do have one last question, and it's basically for clarification. I notice you keep saying Zuffa. Is that, how is it that they're using Zuffa in new contract language?
Well, because Zuffa is a legal entity they use. It's basically the same as UFC. There's a hierarchy where that's UFC. Okay. There's now TKO, UFC Holdings, Zuffa. And then UFC under Zuffa, which is strange enough, but Zuffa is the legal company that does the business. UFC is the brand name, so it's the same company, but for legal documentations they use Zuffa, and for the public it's UFC.
I always assume that when Endeavor took over, that Zuffa went away.
Well, it kind of did because they made a UFC Holdings, but I don't know for sure why they kept Zuffa, but a very strong possibility is because Zuffa was under a lawsuit and was liable, that, and they inherited that liability. They had to keep the name. They had to keep the company going.
Okay, I see now. Okay, that makes sense.
I mean, that's just me just pondering, taking a guess, but that seems like it's a possibility.
Okay. I'm just curious because, like I said, when Endeavor came in and took over, it's like all references to Zuffa disappeared except in these court documents.
Yeah, pretty much. But the other thing too is besides look at Endeavor, all the companies, Endeavor, mm-hmm. William Morris, there's different versions of William Morris, different versions of Endeavor, all within the same parent company.
Yeah.
It gets confusing, but we do. It's a good thing you pointed that out because that's one thing I notice is people get very confused, especially newer fans, about what Zuffa is.
Mm-hmm.
And or even older fans who think Zuffa is gone. Zuffa and the UFC are the same thing, okay. Just different you know, just in the one's the public brand name and the other's the legal corporation.
Well, all right. That about puts a pin in this episode. And right now I'm going to ask you to predict Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua. Like, I want a round. I want a method. I want the winner. Tell me
I thought you said, I want you to tell me exactly how Francis is going to win, what round.
Exactly.
I mean, I have to favor Joshua. I have to favor Joshua that he will slowly. I mean, just based on the fact that we have much more tape on Joshua, much more history, that I favor him. But I'm going to give two. I mean, my 60% chance Joshua takes that Ngannou goes later rounds and Joshua beats him down at some point. I don't think he knocks him up at the maybe ref stop, let's say, in the very end of the fight. The other possibility, which is not, you know, 40%, is Ngannou catches him in fourth or fifth round and just terminates him.
Yeah. I mean, it could go to a decision too, but I don't see, that's the one thing. I don't see Francis winning a decision against
Joshua. It's just because he's not, as much as he's just not the better box, he hasn't the skill. But one thing people, I think Francis should want is boxers, MMA fighters, heavyweights are not very athletic, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one thing. They're often just trash compared to the other weight classes. Mm-hmm. And I think with Francis, and I talk to some boxing people, one thing he shows is just kind of like he really revealed, you know, we thought Fury was this great guy, but he really revealed kind of how trash he is, mm-hmm. which is a mean thing to say. But what I think part of it is people miss is, I think Ngannou is like a super athlete. And because he comes out of Cameroon and because he had no opportunity to do anything, he got into fighting, you know, UFC and boxing. If he was in the U.S. at a young age, he would have been like a middle linebacker, an edge rusher. In the NFL, we would have never seen him in combat sports. It's only because he comes from, you know, he comes from an impoverished background and his route he took that we even have him here. But he is an athlete beyond what he's like a Yoel Romero figure. One of the few, you know, he's a super athlete that we have in the sport. And not many heavyweight boxers are super athletes because the good ones are, you know, doing something else.
Yeah. He's definitely something special. And to be doing this late in his athletic prime too.
And I'll make this note too. And this comes from other people who have nothing to do with his camp, nothing to do with his, you know, PFL. According to them, is like he is one of the most on the ball fighters about the business and talking to people. Like he really understands things way other fighters don't, and he'll ask questions about where, well, who gets that money and stuff like that. That is, you know, I mean, a good example is what he did with his career when everybody, you know, put him down. But he apparently is much, much more savvy in a negotiation than people would assume.
Well, he also seems, if you look at him from a purely athletic aspect, just watching his fight with Fury, he looked sharp, crisp. He looked like he'd been doing it for a long time. He looked like he belonged there. Also, his cardio held up very, very well. I was so surprised. And here's the biggest tell. Did you notice that Tyson Fury was not in the best shape, but after he tasted that power, what happened? He went and got in tremendous shape for the Usyk fight. Unfortunately, he got the cut, but man, looking at the body transformation going from Ngannou to Usyk was, I mean, it was stark. So I feel like he deserves his flowers athletically for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just don't want to go on all the different boxing. I'll say this too. All the big paydays, the one, unless Ngannou gets the title on the line, the one guy I think I would stay away from him is Usyk.
Yeah, I think I would too.
It's just because the Usyk has so much experience and has so much skill that it's like, can you overcome that in the short duration they've been focused on boxing, even if you're an amazing athlete? I would find that hard. I think his chances are much better against the other big guys that are not the athlete he is.
Yeah, and Usyk is hyper durable too. Like he could take a big punch.
Yeah, I mean, the question, we'll see. I guess it depends too what happens with Fury, because if he just gets just demolished by Fury, we're gonna eat and crow and we're gonna go, well, I was wrong about Usyk. That was the guy to take on. But I just just right now I think no. In fact I give Usyk a pretty good shot against Fury.
Me too. All right, so that's gonna bring us to a close. Follow this guy on Twitter. He is at Hey Not The Face. His messages are open. You can also get him on Gmail, heynotheface@gmail.com. You can catch me and my messages as well if you have questions, comments, suggestions, what have you. I'm Crooklyn MMA on Twitter, crooklyn949@gmail.com. From here, y'all know the drill. Until next time. Please stay safe.
Not in the face! Thank you.